All right, just a moment past 4 o'clock, which means it's time to welcome my regular guest, Chris Carey, volunteers his time to select and research our classic picks each week and then comes in to discuss his findings with us. This week, he's brought in a classic from The Kinks. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Yeah, so we're looking at The Kinks, Arthur, in parentheses, or The Decline and Fall of the British Empire, which came out this month, 50 years ago in 1969. 50 years,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And so this record was their seventh studio LP. And it, the Kinks, as many of you know, they're regarded as one of the most important and influential rock groups of the British invasion. They're from a North London suburb, Muswell Hill, and formed in 63 by the Davies brothers. That's Dave and Ray Davies. And I got to see Ray Davies once. That was pretty cool. Anyway, they're part of the British invasion. So for those of you who are not familiar with that, that's in the mid to late 60s when a lot of British bands started getting popular in the U.S. Some of the most notable bands, along with the Kinks, were, of course, the Beatles and Rolling Stones, the Who, Yardbirds, Herman Hermits, the Animals. But along with that, there was a lot of British movies that came in at the same time, like Mary Poppins, the 007 movies, My Fair Lady, and even found its way into TV with stuff like The Saints and The Avengers.
So a pop culture,
yes,
not political invasion.
Yeah, so it was, and along with the British invasion kind of came the mod culture, subculture kind of thing. And the Kinks, they got their start in 1964 with the hit You Really Got Me, and that was a top 10 hit in both the U.S. and the U.K. Between the 60s and 70s, they released a number of hit singles. They kind of got to be known as a very British band, even more British than a lot of the other British invasion kind of bands. A lot of their song titles, themes, phrasing, what have you, was very British. You know, and they all of their albums, you know, are really good to great, but some of the stuff really between the mid-60s and early 70s is just amazing. The lineup, this is actually, Arthur was the first album to be recorded not featuring the original quartet. You know, the brothers Ray and Dave Davies, Mick Avery on drums, and Pete Quaife was on bass, but he dropped out of the band after Village Green Preservation Society and was replaced by John Dalton, who had already played with them some. In different instances, this was a concept album. And like the Village Green Preservation Society, which we reviewed a year ago when it was 50 years old, was also a concept album. And what's kind of interesting is that album was kind of about quaint small town life in rural England, where this concept record dealt with the malaise affecting most of the middle and lower class in Britain, post-war Britain, which, you know, had a lot of economic and social problems. It was based on this fictional Arthur Morgan, who was kind of partially based on the Davies' brother-in-law, Arthur Anning, who was a carpet layer and had a hard time finding work. And him and the Davies' brother's sister actually moved to Australia. They emigrated into Australia in, I think, 64. And actually, it really bummed, both the brothers missed their sister. That bummed them out.
Aww.
But this was, we were talking a second ago before we were on the mic, and originally, this album was developed to be part of a TV show on British TV, and kind of, you know, and you would see the day in the life of this Arthur character, but that fell through, and they continued on with the record. It was recorded in Pye Studios, which was a tiny little studio that only bands on the Pye label pretty much recorded in. It was recorded in just a couple months in 69. Ray Davies was the sole producer of this record. This was the second album that Ray Davies produced by himself. And after, basically, Village Green was the first that he produced by himself. And after that, every album that came out that was Kinks was always Ray Davies produced. Prior to that, something else in 1967 was co-produced by Sheldon Talmy, who had solely produced all of their albums before that. And so you can kind of see that there are these two kind of phases, and maybe three if you want to count them, late 70s, but at least early on, there were these two phases with the Kinks. The stuff that Talmy produced was always much more pop
yeah,
and single, you know, kind of focus on it, whereas the stuff that that Davies produced was always a lot more artistic and psych-tinged.
Imaginative.
Yeah,
kind of
garagey meets mod kind of thing. Critically, this album, from the get-go, everybody loved it. It was actually loved. It was lauded much more in the U.S. than it was the U.K., although the U.K. critics liked it quite a bit, too. Actually, Rolling Stone in 1969 thought it was the best British album of 1969. And mind you, this is a year that the Beatles' Abbey Road came out, King Crimson's Quarterly.
Yeah,
King
I was going to say, there's a lot of competition
Led Zeppelin
that time.
II came out in 69, you know, and the Rolling Stones' Let It Bleed came out. So that's saying a lot that the Rolling Stone critic at the time thought that. I don't know if I necessarily agree with him, but I definitely would agree this is one of the best British albums of 1969. It's a great record. The funny thing is, though, that Arthur didn't sell that well, much like Village Green Preservation Society didn't sell that well. At the time, they were just kind of modest selling records, and then over time, they've kind of grown to this huge influential status. And it's kind of funny is that the Kinks, not that they're not a band that everybody knows, but they've kind of taken a second tier within the British invasion as far as fame and fortune kind of thing. But as far as influence, I think they're right up there with some of the most important bands of the late 60s. And the Kinks kind of always have been kind of a band's band. They just never sold it. I mean, I think they only sold 25,000 copies of this at the time. But it's grown to be one of the best-selling Kinks studio albums ever. And, it's kind of, I think that you could probably argue that this is one of the most influential concept records, at the time, maybe even out of the entire 60s and early part of rock and roll. I mean, concept albums, there'd only been a few of them before the Kinks started doing it with Village Green. Also, I know we've talked about this in the past, and I think that this might have something to do with why the Kinks didn't see the same sort of fame that the Who and the Beatles did, at least in the U.S., and that was due to their band, their unofficial band.
The touring aspect, rather lack thereof.
Yeah, so in 1965, they were on tour, and the Kinks very early on got kind of a reputation for a drunken, rowdy, carousing kind of band.
Proto-Oasis behavior.
Yeah. That's the Oasis, pattern their behavior on the Kinks. And while they were in San Francisco, some guy who worked with the stage crew where they were playing, who also happened to be a huge high up in the American Federation of Musicians, which was the union that actually gave permits to bands outside of the U.S. to tour, which that was a thing in the late 60s, he said some anti-British statement, and Ray Davies clocked him. And so they kind of got in a fight, and it didn't help that they hadn't been paying their dues to this organization.
Oops.
So
yeah,
they wouldn't grant them a permit. And so from 1964 to 1969, they didn't tour the U.S. They weren't on any, radio interviews. There were no TV shows. They didn't get on the Ed Sullivan show. So I've always said, I wonder if they had paid their dues, if they hadn't gotten in a fight with this guy and they toured the U.S., they might have been much, much bigger than they were.
Well, I mean, Oasis aside, I do also think that they were very influential on the Britpop movement in the 90s. A lot of the way they paid attention to their lyrics and sort of the wry humor and all that, I think shows up in a lot of bands like Blur or Suede or any of those other bands.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, that whole, the Britpop thing that went on in the late 80s through mid 90s.
They sowed the seeds.
Exactly. And I think that, really the Kinks have kind of, that's really how I see them. They're more of a band's band. And they're the kind of, like, almost every band you can imagine out there, from Van Halen to the Ramones, have cited the Kinks as one of their primary influences and one of the bands that drove them to become artists themselves.
Absolutely. I'm talking with Chris Carey about our classic pick of the week. Anything else to add before we dip into your first selection here?
No, I just wanted to, there was a couple of interesting points about the song we're playing today. Track 8, Mr. Churchill Says, of course, that is in reference to Winston Churchill, who was a prime minister during World War II, as again in 1951 to 1955. For those of you who have watched The Crown, you know this. Anyway, the lyrics include this kind of amalgam of two famous speeches delivered by Winston Churchill just prior to and during the Battle of Britain. And it's kind of cool because I don't think I've heard Winston Churchill's speeches in a song before.
You don't listen to much Iron Maiden then.
Well, maybe, yeah. Well, I do listen to Iron Maiden, but maybe I've never noticed that.
They start off all their shows with that. Yeah,
well, yeah, but I guess they don't. I don't remember hearing it in The Trooper or Run to the Hills.
Aces High, yo.
Oh, maybe so.
All right.
Okay, but I will say this. I believe, and I'm not 100% sure on this, but I believe this might be the earliest song that ever uses a air raid siren in the.
Very good.
And it only predates War Pigs by a year, but I think it might be
the first.
But
they got there first. Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. Let's hear your selection here. Mr. Churchill Says from the Kinks, Arthur, our classic pick of the week. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you.